Kevin Kelly, the head coach at Pulaski Academy, and the Pulaski Academy football program, the focus of a Real Sports segment that's coming up. John Frankel was the reporter and was in town and is and turned the story and joins us now on the Revolution Hotline, and we're certainly happy to have him.
How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Are you where are you based? Are you in New York?
I am in New York.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's not morning for you, it's this morning for us. But anyway, we appreciate you fitting us in. I know you got a busy schedule.
No. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so tell us about how the PA program and what they do came to your guys' attention and how you decided it was worthy of a real sports story.
I saw a small item probably a year and a half ago is when it first ran in Sports Illustrated,
mm-hmm,
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And right away caught my attention. I just thought it was so clever. Whether it was right, I didn't know at the time because I hadn't read enough. But I thought it was clever and followed up with a call to Coach Kelly, and we spent an hour plus on the phone, which, as you know, is not hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And was just fascinated by his philosophy and his strategy. And clearly he had the numbers to back it up, and I don't just mean in the statistics in which he designed the strategy around, but in his success. And so it took a little while. We don't always jump right away, but it took a little while. And my producer and colleague, Nick Dolan, once he spoke to him, I think, was easily swayed that this was a terrific story to do and had some merit.
So when you saw it put into practice in person or on tape, either way, I'm not sure if you, I guess you were in town, yes, for the story?
I was in town, yeah. They were preparing, the team was preparing for its semifinal game. And delighted, hysterical, entertained, all of those things. One, it's just a real pleasure to watch kids have fun playing football, which obviously his team does, and part of that is because of their success. But to take Sandlot football and refine it to a really high level. And I don't mean to insult Coach Kelly in any way when I say, Sandlot football.
Right.
I mean, just when you watch them have fun and run trick plays, we all love to do that. And so, you know, the first play we were there for, I mean, it was an option, I think it was a halfback option reverse for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great, and to watch the kids practicing the onside kick.
Yeah.
Really entertaining.
I think that's the best part of the whole deal. I mean, that gets lost in it. Everyone wants to talk about the no punting and the trick plays, but I think the onside kick philosophy and the execution of the onside kick, because there really is a knack to it, and they have perfected it if it's ever been done.
Yeah, but I'll tell you one better, actually. Here's the one that I really got a kick out of, and people will appreciate having watched, I'm assuming, the playoff games yesterday, is the lack of a punt return.
Yeah.
And to watch those kids literally run off the field after they've given sort of a pseudo rush just to ensure that the other team actually does punt the ball. And, you see why. I don't know the statistics there, and Coach Kelly and I were just discussing it today by email, what the numbers are in terms of, for a return team, how often does a team commit a penalty or a turnover, mm-hmm, on a punt return, to validate his theory there. But as he says, I've already accomplished what I wanted to do, which is I've got the ball back. Why risk it?
It's a good point. I mean, and that's the thing. It's so outside the box, but it is, anecdotally, you could probably remember a number of them off the top of your head. And being a Syracuse grad, I'm sure you've probably seen some Orangemen games that ended in, or where punt returns have hurt you guys over the years. But, we can all think of instances, just like yesterday, like you said, of teams suffering from
both
trying to.
Both games were affected by punt. Edelman turned a punt over, and obviously, two by the 49ers.
Sure, and look, just that bounces off the knee,
yeah,
or skims the knee, and when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, look, there are going to be people that argue that say, well, wait a minute, what about the guy who breaks one and takes it back all the way?
Sure.
Okay, how often does that happen? And I could probably call it up right now, but with the best punt returner in the NFL, what is he average this year? If a guy has an 18-yard return average, he's probably at the top of top of the list.
Yeah. That is interesting because as Razorback football fans, we saw how effective Joe Adams can be in that punt return game. And so I guess there's always a couple of sides of it. But then again, you look at it, and I think, I don't know how many he actually ran for this year, two or three, possibly ran back. I know definitely.
Five.
Oh, he ran five. Okay, well then, maybe from his point of view.
When
does,
you count the Cotton Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, you count the Cotton Bowl, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, the numbers say it, and you know, we spoke to a guy named Toby Moskowitz, who's a professor of business at the University of Chicago Booth School, and he's done the research, as have others, but Toby looked at 10 years of NFL plays and found that, you know, when, especially when it comes to fourth down, how conservative NFL coaches are.
Mm-hmm.
And we broadened the piece out a little bit to look at the fact that this is, and Coach Kelly discusses this, which is that people, you know, our decisions are motivated or influenced more by the idea of losing something, our fear of losing something, rather than our potential. Obviously, it's not a given, but our potential to gain something, you know. And yeah. So we are afraid, and this loss aversion or risk aversion is something that permeates every facet of our society. You know, so one of the great examples that you read about in the scorecasting book, and Coach Kelly, I think, you know, is all about this as well, which is that, you know, if I put $100 on the table and I ask you, let's flip a coin. Heads, you get the $100, tails, you don't. You'll play that game with me every minute of every day, right?
Yes.
Now, I give you the $100 and I say, here, put it in your wallet. Now let's flip a coin. Heads, you get to keep it, tails, you give it back to me. All of a sudden, you don't want to play that game as often.
No, I don't like that game anymore.
You don't like that game. It's the same $100. It wasn't yours to begin with. I just gave it to you, but now you do not want to lose it. Or a better example that people across America over the last 4 years can relate to, and that they talk about, Toby Moskowitz and John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated wrote this book, Scorecasting Together, is the idea of selling a house, which is I put my house on the market for, let's say, $100,000. You come by and offer me $90,000. I say, you know what, that's not what I'm asking. I don't want to lose the $10,000. But I got to carry the home for the next 3 months until I sell it to the next guy, and it just cost me $15,000. Had I taken your $90,000, I'd have been ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just this idea of we don't like to lose. We were afraid to have something and then feel like we lost it or got cheated out of something.
As a guy who's lost a lot in his life, most of the time, it doesn't bother me as much as most people, but you make a good point.
You get used to it?
Yeah, I'm a loser. I mean, this is the way it goes. John Frankel joining us, Real Sports with Brian Gumbel on HBO. It's a great show, and everybody's watched it, I'm sure. It debuts, I guess, for this season, the 18th season, which is amazing, tomorrow, and this story will be part of the initial broadcast for the 2012 season. Let me ask you about your role there, John, and you've had a lot of different roles in television, in sports and otherwise, and as a former, you know, general assignment guy and, you know, affiliate sports guy, these are the kinds of stories you sort of live for, but you have to do all the other stories that lead up to it. Working for Real Sports has got to be such a great thing for you as a reporter, I would think, because every story you tell is the story you live for.
It is. I feel so fortunate, and, you know, it's funny that it takes you so long to find the place that you want to be at in life. You know, I started out as a local sportscaster in West Palm Beach, Florida, did Miami. I've covered every game, probably every major event that you can imagine, and they've all been great fun. And I've covered high school football to the Super Bowls and women's golf to the Masters. But it's, you know, this is a perfect, and I've covered wars and human interest stories, and this is the perfect balance of doing substantive journalism, good stories, human interest stories, profiles, and doing it well and with really smart people, mm-hmm. and who are willing to vet stories and take our time and do it right and make sure that we do it in a balanced and fair manner. And I say this, I know people laugh at me, people say, oh, you know, you love your show, and I feel so fortunate to be a part of it. I really do. I just wish we did one every week instead of every month.
Right. Do you guys have deadlines, or I mean, or do you just say, hey, my story's ready, you can run it whenever? How does that work?
No, we generally get assigned, you know, or a story to do with usually a target date in mind. And more often than not, it's only a month or 2 months out. But we just shot a story, for instance, in South Africa down in Cape Town about wingsuit flyers. Wingsuit pilots. I don't know if you're familiar with these guys.
Yeah, those guys are wild.
And a guy named Jeb Corliss, and you know, that story's going to air in March. So that's a little unusual for us to be, you know, looking, you know, that far ahead of the game. But generally we know, hey, we're going to do this piece and it's going to air next month.
What's a story that's eluded you? Something that you've wanted to do for a long time that you haven't been able to get together?
We've done this story, and we did a special show on it in March. With the NCAA, and we've done a couple now, but I have not been the correspondent on it, and we don't work that way. I mean, I feel like we have a really decent staff, and that nobody's backstabbing. Oh, I want to do that one. I want to do this one.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we could do a piece like that that would, you know, really have a watershed moment that we could really change the face of college athletics, and I know that may not be popular with a lot of people, but I love college football as much as the next guy, and I know I'm speaking to people in SEC country where it's no bigger, but I just really feel like there need to be some significant changes, as do I think a lot of the people on our staff, and maybe it's just us doing them repeatedly and chipping away at what is accepted as the norm now, and maybe our show will be one of many that will eventually create a groundswell.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of somebody off the top of my head that I've, you know, right away that I would like to do that, you know, as a profile. There's so many interesting people out there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Coach Kelly for me speaks to that, you know, that there's, you know, the opportunity that I get to meet somebody like him who's smart and entertaining and a good television story and a good character and is also nice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you know, this might fall on deaf ears to your listeners, but and they might not grasp it. But somebody who also is willing to give us access, doesn't have something to hide. You know, we do stories, and even if people feel like they're not hiding something, we'll do stories on people, and because the world around them has created this sense of their all importance, and you just can't get the access that you want. And so when we do stories about Coach Kelly or a Jeb Corliss, this wingsuit pilot, and they're like, sure, whatever you want, that only makes for a better story.
Yeah.
By the way, just as an little side, because I've the wonderful world of the internet, Edelman, Royal from Denver, is number one in punt return average. You want to know what it is?
What is it?
9.
There you go.
Wow.
Edelman is 8.8, 8.4 after that. Blackman from the Giants, 6.8. So that, if nothing else, tells you what Coach Kelly is doing on punt returns.
Wow. John.
What's he risking?
Exactly.
John Frankel, HBO Real Sports, join us. And to that, with Coach Kelly, how unique have you found that his philosophy is? And is there anybody that is using something similar to that around the country?
We
on any
haven't
level?
Found, you know, we guesstimated that there are, what, 10,000 football coaches in this country?
Yeah.
Maybe more, you know, if you close colleges, all the high schools. We didn't find anybody that's running a similar system. And, you know, I know that he's had calls from college coaches who say, I'd love to do it. I see what you're doing. And, you know, it again goes back to risk aversion and so forth. And nobody, you know, he says he spent time with coaches. They visited him, and they want to see it. They want to see the numbers. And he's waiting. You know, he turns on the TV waiting to see them change,
right.
And nothing changes. So the short answer is no. We didn't find anybody else who's doing this. And I think people would make the argument, even, you know, Sean Payton of the Saints, who we interview in the story, you know, would make the case that, hey, the high school game is different from the NFL game. The punters are more proficient at the NFL, you know, at the NFL level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but obviously, as witnessed yesterday, the punt returners, you know, make just as many mistakes as the high school kids
there
do. So in terms of going for it, you know, a lot more coaches should be doing it. And what, you know, it's clear if you've got fans and the media and the owner ready to scrutinize and question your moves the minute you walk off that field,